Blog Talk Radio.
To Watford, three on the way. Oh! It went in! It went in! And Indiana wins the ball game. Christian Watford with a three.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
This is Indiana. Yeah, we do it big. Boston on the Big Ten. You know what it is.
Indiana defeats Evansville 77-46. I'm your host tonight, Jared Morris. I will be joined by Andy Bottoms here in just a little bit. Ryan Phillips is out tonight, so it will just be the two of us. We're doing a little something different tonight. If you are listening in on Blog Talk Radio, it should sound pretty much the same. We also have the Google Hangout, the live on-air hangout going, so you can actually watch Andy and I talk as we go. And we will be taking calls tonight, too. The number is 646-716-6360, so definitely feel free to call in. We have Zach man at the phone line, so if you have a hot sports opinion on the Hoosiers that you want to give after tonight's game, feel free to call in and give that to us. But let's break down tonight's game. Indiana, of course, coming off of the tough, you know, last-second loss to UConn. Everybody was interested to see how they would bounce back tonight. The Hoosiers ended up jumping out to that early 11-0 lead, really never looked back. For me, that's my banner moment tonight. You know, as we start out as we normally do with our banner moment, our bottom line. The banner moment to me is in the second half when Evansville made a little bit of a run. They got it down to 11 points, but it was a key juncture in the game. You know, is Indiana going to let this team hang around, or are they going to stomp their foot on them and put them away? And I thought the Hoosiers did a really nice job there of pushing that lead back up. They got it out to 18, 19 points again pretty quickly after that. And then, you know, it was all Indiana from there, and they end up coasting to the big victory. A lot to talk about tonight, including Jeff Howard starting, a resurgent game from Jeremy Hollowell in response to that. We are going to cover it all for you this evening, as we always do. But with that said, let me now turn it over to my partner tonight, Andy Bottoms, and let's get his Bottoms line on tonight's IU victory.
All right. Well, for me, this is really about the defense. You know, Evansville came in with a lot of good KenPom numbers, really shot the ball well from three-point range coming in. Now, probably come to find out from a competition standpoint, that probably played into it a little bit, but still came in with some pretty robust offensive efficiency numbers. They were 25th in the nation coming into tonight. So I really thought IU's defense was able to take them out of it early, obviously, as they got off to a big run, and really throughout. They made just 3 of 16 from three-point range. DJ Ballantyne had 14, and he was averaging close to 30 coming in. And, you know, I think that's something that it seemed like they were able to build on coming off of the UConn game, which was one of the things that I took away from that game, was just that, you know, they seemed to play a lot better defensively, still have a little trouble stopping the ball on dribble penetration, but generally speaking, defense, at least over the last couple games, feels like it's turning into a strength for the team, and I think that's one of the things we talked about early on. That's going to be key for a team that's going to probably struggle to make outside shots on a consistent basis to be able to at least bring a defense each week. So tonight, at least, I thought that was really the big difference. You know, a few offensive performances we'll talk about, but nobody really, you know, Hollowell ended up with 18, I think, but pretty balanced effort offensively, but I thought really defense was something that set the tone early and carried them throughout.
Now, let's talk a little bit about Jeremy Hallowell, because he's, probably the biggest story coming out of tonight's game. The big story at the beginning of the game was that Jeff Howard actually ended up starting. It was kind of a surprise there right before tip-off. And in probably one of the coolest IU basketball stories in a while, Jeff Howard actually was trending there in America for a while, which shows you the power of the IU fan base that, former walk-on Jeff Howard can, can get a spot in the starting lineup, and he's trending in America via Twitter. And it was, it was a surprise, and at least listening to the announcers, it sounded like it was, a reward for playing hard. And so maybe Tom Crean is sending a message in a game. I think that, that he expected to win a game where you kind of can send a message like that, and he did. Howard actually went in there, played pretty well, got some rebounds, was able to pick up a bucket, so did some nice things. But I think for the long term, Hallowell is the more important player, obviously, than Jeff Howard. And so you look at Hallowell's numbers, he finished with 18 points. He had 3 boards, 2 steals, and assists. He was, more importantly, he was efficient. He was 4 of 8 from the field. He was 2 of 5 from 3-point range. He was also 8 of 9 from the free throw line. So he was able to get in there, knock down some free throws. It wasn't a perfect performance by any means, but it was progress. And it was definitely nice to see for a guy that a lot of people think is an X factor for this Indiana team. So, Andy, assess Hallowell's performance a little bit. And did you see anything different? Did you see him maybe playing harder and more focused to where you can kind of point to that benching and say, hey, this is maybe a reason for why we saw a better game out of Hallowell tonight?
I thought the biggest difference was, and whether this had anything to do with the benching or not, I thought the biggest difference for me was just that he got to the line again. I'm kind of looking at his game-to-game stats. The first game, he scored 16 points. He got to the line 10 times. His other double-figure game, he got to the line 6 times. And then most of the other games, the UConn game, he got there 4 times. But the other 3 games, he got there combined once. And not coincidentally, he scored 6 or 7 points in each one. And I think to a certain extent, it's kind of odd on a night where he shot 5 three-pointers. And a couple of them may be ill-advised, but he did knock down a couple of those 5. But I thought he was just, getting to the line, for him to make a couple shots seems to, really help his confidence. He stepped in, passed up a three-pointer and hit a mid-range jump shot at one point in the game. Kind of felt to me a little bit like what Ryan and I typically want to see Sheehy do and not settle for that jump shot and kind of work inside out. So I think that really helped him tonight. Whether the benching was a big factor in that or not probably remains to be seen. Could be a case where he just feels more comfortable coming off the bench. I think we saw that the last few years with Sheehy. There were times when he would get inserted in the starting lineup and he would be okay, but wouldn't be quite the same as he was coming off the bench. So might just be a case where maybe it's not Jeff Howard going forward, but maybe it's somebody else that's in the starting lineup and lets Hallowell kind of play with the second team a little bit in the way that Crean, at least for parts of the game tonight, was kind of rotating, multiple man units in at a time. And maybe that's something that, he just responds better to, a little bit less pressure, a little bit more relaxed coming in. But the big thing for me was just his ability and willingness to get to the line and draw contact and those things. And I thought that was good. But, you still saw a lot of the up-and-down plays that we've seen from him over the first part of the season, too, where, got into traffic a couple times and didn't, got in the air and needed to pass the ball, had to figure out what to do with it. Sometimes that worked, sometimes it didn't. Generally I think it was certainly positive for him and for a guy whose confidence we've talked a lot about and potentially what, how much he needs to see a few, shots go through the basket to really get his confidence up. I think in that regard, nothing positive and certainly a guy they're going to need, particularly on the offensive glass, when they go play Syracuse next week.
Yeah.
When you think about guys off the bench, you tend to think about, one or two things, kind of either energy guys or scoring. And Jeremy Hallowell is not, a guy whose nickname that I've seen a lot on Twitter, Sleepy Hallowell. A guy like that probably isn't going to be an energy guy for you, but certainly he can score points. And so, let's say that, and that is one thing, Indiana has had the last few years with Will Sheehy, the guy who is both an energy guy and a guy who can score points. And with Will moving into the starting lineup, now there's obviously a role there for the taking. Let's say that Jeremy Hallowell does move into that role. Let's say that this is, what we saw tonight begins a trend and he is more comfortable bench, like you said. Andy, when it was first announced that Jeff Howard was starting, I was just reading some of your tweets, and it seemed like you had a little bit of an issue with it. Not with you know, putting someone in over Hollowell, but, you know, maybe with just putting in Howard, you know, a guy who didn't play much, if at all, in the last couple games. I think, you know, he played a little bit up in New York, but didn't play much, obviously, not a rotation player. And you thought that maybe someone else should have gotten those minutes. So, say Hollowell does go to the bench and becomes the sixth man, in your kind of ideal starting lineup, who would step in there? What fifth guy would kind of complete Indiana's lineup and make it as well-rounded as possible?
Yeah, I mean, I guess to kind of go back to some of my thoughts before the game, and I'll get to the question. I just thought it was odd. Jeff Howard, to me, I'm sure is a guy who plays really hard in practice all the time. You know, a guy who's just, you know, very glad to be part of the program, has, you know, been a practice contributor over the first few years of his career, and hasn't got a lot of minutes. So, you know, I didn't mean that in any way that he didn't deserve it for some reason, but I don't know that he played any harder in practice this week than he did before, and he didn't play in some of those other games, even some of the ones that weren't very close. So Stony Brook, you know, won by 16, 18 points. He didn't play at all in that one. The LIU game was close and whatever. So, you know, he definitely responded, though, on the flip side of that, you know, made a few nice plays and was active and involved. So I think he'll, whether he starts or not, will probably continue to see more minutes than maybe what we've seen from him over the first part of the year. In terms of ideal guys for the lineup, you know, one of the guys I mentioned was Devin Davis, although I think a couple things might make him a better guy coming off the bench as well. I think he can maybe be the other part of what Sheehy gave. So kind of mentioned scoring and energy. Might be that Devin Davis is the energy guy and Hollowell is the scoring guy, and maybe it takes two guys to replace one in that role. But, you know, maybe something that we see a little bit more of. You know, the other guy who I thought would be interesting in that spot, which a few games ago I never would have thought I said, would be Evan Gordon. He seems to be somebody who's really, maybe is just getting acclimated to his new teammates and playing for IU, but I do think he's been, you know, doing a lot of little things well, and I've been impressed with him, and maybe a guy who brings some stability and can do a few different things. So, I don't know whether that's true. I think there's the potential downside of playing 2 6-foot guards, as we kind of saw at times, you know, last season. But he might be one that I think about putting in there. But I, you know, quite honestly, the way Howard played, you know, maybe he's the guy who plays a few minutes at the beginning of the game and gets some minutes out of him and see what happens. So, you know, maybe it's one of those man broke, don't fix it kind of things after the way he played tonight, and we'll kind of see what it's like and go from there.
Let's talk a little bit about Will Sheehy. This is kind of the honorary Ryan Phillips segment of the evening since Ryan's not here. You know, you look at Sheehy's line tonight, and, you know, it's not overwhelming. 6 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, 1 block. You know, I mean, it's the kind of stuff that's not shoot a little bit. As I was watching the game, I found myself very impressed with Will's play. It wasn't one of those, you know, kind of wow you games. He didn't have a big dunk in the lane. It wasn't like Purdue where he was just making every single shot inside and scoring 20 points. But I thought he showed a lot of leadership tonight. I thought he played within himself. He let the game come to him, and I know those are cliches. But in a game like that, I think...
Is he on the cliches or Stephen Bardo? We don't need that. We heard plenty of cliches tonight from Mr. Bardo. We're done.
I'm wondering why I keep holding this up. We're trying some new technology this evening. And unfortunately, I can't hear Andy through the Google Hangout that we're doing, so I have to put this up to listen through Blog Talk Radio. But
it's okay. We adjust on the fly. We make things happen. But to get back to the point about Will, you know, in a game like tonight, you know, especially after that UConn game where a lot of young guys maybe had their confidence shaken, you know, Hollowell didn't play well, Noah was off, Troy didn't really get going, Stanford Robinson didn't do much, on and on. I thought Will really, he didn't force it, he let other guys, you know, kind of shine, gave other guys their chances, you know, but he made hustle plays, he made smart plays, he did the little thing, and when the shots were there, he took them. I don't remember one shot tonight where I was like, oh, Will, what are you doing? You know, and so in that sense, I really thought it's not a game that, you know, maybe when we look back on his career, we don't remember this as some great game. But I thought, you know, all the critiques we've given Will about, you know, forcing the action, trying to do too much, I really thought tonight was a really good example of Will, you know, filling his role correctly. And especially now that he's more of a leader in a game like this, I really liked what I saw from him tonight. Am I overplaying it, or did you kind of think the same thing watching him?
No, I saw some of the same things, I would say. You know, for me, I've noticed this in a couple of the games that have been more blowouts, I guess, where he really has has kind of taken a backseat a little bit to other guys, hasn't forced the action. You know, you kind of look at his game-to-game, the Stanford game, for example. He only ended up playing 18 minutes, but he had just big points in that one. Chicago State had just 10. You know, he's kind of saved some of those for, you know, he scored a big 19 against LIU and, 16 against Washington, and he doesn't against Connecticut. But it seems like something he's, maybe it's a conscious effort, maybe it isn't to, you know, to do some of those things in games where, you know, where they may not need him to score a lot of points. But I think in contrast to a game like the Stony Brook game where he really let some of the officiating and the calls maybe get in his head or just kind of hinder his ability to impact a game, I didn't see that tonight at all. You know, made plays diving on the floor, kind of ended up with a foul call there, similar to the Stony Brook game in some regard. But I was probably just as incredulous as he was that he got called for it. And, you know, but I thought, you know, did a good job of just doing the little things, setting a good example. And I think that's what you can see from him in a game like tonight. I think there's a certain level of, you know, leadership and maturity that leads somebody to that, because it's real easy in a game like that to be like, well, look, everybody else is scoring. They're not playing very good defense. I should be able to get 16 points tonight. And didn't really feel like, as you said, he tried to force things in the interest of just, you know, putting up numbers on somebody when it really wasn't necessary.
Yeah.
I see our viewer number going up here on the Google Live Hangout. I know we have a lot of live listeners down on Blog Talk Radio. So just want to say welcome to everybody. If you're either listening or watching, if you are listening and you want to call in, the number is 646-716-6360. We will be taking calls now as we go throughout the rest of the season. Zach, our producer, is waiting and standing by for you if you call. So let him know what you want to talk about, and we'll get you on the air. You can also submit questions there via the Google Live Hangout. And we have a question submitted right now, Andy. So let me pose this to you. A couple tough games in a row for Troy Williams. Any thoughts on his place in the starting lineup? Is he safe? And if so, should he be? It seems like off the bench, he'd be the ultimate energy guy like Jared referred to at the top of the show. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I actually, coming into the season, felt like that might be the role that he would end up with. Felt like he seemed like a good fit for that and a guy who could really, you know, bring that energy off the bench. At this point, I feel like we're taking too many guys out of the starting lineup when we start, like, four guys, maybe three. I think his spot's probably safe for now. I think he's one where you probably let him work through some of the growing pains that he's bound to have as a freshman. And I thought, you know, rebounding-wise, I thought he did well tonight. And, I you know, he ended up with two turnovers, at least based on the box score that I'm looking at. But I thought he played a little bit more under control than he did at times against UConn. And I think he's one where, you know, and maybe this is something we can touch on as we go, but, you know, kind of substitution patterns and things like that. I think he's a guy who needs to play a little bit longer and get a little bit of a feel for things. And it almost feels like to me the longer he's in, the more comfortable he seems. So in that regard, you know, I like him in the starting lineup, but, you know, maybe if it's a case where, you know, want to put Hollowell back in or start Devin Davis, I could see him coming off the bench. I think he'd do well in that role because of the exact reasons that you mentioned. But I would imagine he'll stay in the starting lineup for now.
Okay, well, let's talk a little bit about rotation. You know, I mean, that's one thing that people have talked about with Coach Green, and it's been, you know, a frustration, some of his substitution patterns. You know, early in the first half tonight, you know, he was substituting three, four people at a time. It looked like he was, you know, rotating in Gus Macker teams as opposed to just making substitutions. And I guess to a certain extent, that's what games like this are for. You know, especially with a young team, you're trying different combinations. You're getting guys in who, you know, maybe can't play in a game like the Connecticut game. You're getting a minute here. I guess two-pronged question. Number one, do you like seeing that in games like this where you just kind of throw the whole student body out there, you know, kind of let everybody play and maybe see what works? And number two, you know, are you concerned at all as we go forward, you know, where you know, Coach Crane has perhaps struggled at times to really settle on a good substitution pattern. Do you think it's going to be a unique challenge for him this year with so much depth and a lot of guys maybe, I don't know, 7 through 10, 11, that aren't necessarily going to separate themselves?
You know, I don't know. It's interesting. I kind of view a game like this as maybe more like a NFL exhibition game, as an example, where you kind of have, you know, you let the first half run kind of how you normally would, and you get up by a lot, or you just want to see other guys. And maybe in the second half you do some of those things. But I think at one point, fairly early in the first half, I think 12 guys had played, maybe 11. I could be wrong about that. But, I do think it becomes hard for guys to get into a rhythm, and at some point here in the Big Ten, you're gonna tighten that up. At least you would imagine. And so, at what point in the non-conference schedule do you really start treating it more like a game? And we may not be to that point yet. We're obviously only a handful of games into the season, but I do think at some point that's going to have to sort itself out. And I think we've even seen a lot of variation from game to game. There have been games when Colin Hartman was the first guy off the bench, and then he didn't play, and then tonight he was one of the last guys off the bench. The same thing with Jeff Howard, where he doesn't play, and all of a sudden he's starting. Then you've got, Etherington, I think, has been a little bit the same way. And some of the injury-type things with a guy like Luke Fisher, I think, play a factor in that as well, where, he's getting to a point where I think he can get more minutes. But at some point, it's just going to be hard to get into a lot of rhythm with so many guys coming out, and you almost get yourself into a point where is it even better to do similar to what happened in the first half, where I think he subbed out pretty much all five guys, at one of the first timeouts or some point like that. And maybe that's what you go to, where you have a truer second unit that may play for less time and gives you a few minutes at a time, and those guys are at least able to get comfortable with one another. But I do think you find that at some point, some of these guys are how used to playing with some of the guys that are on the floor. Are they at a given moment and things like that? I know Galen on Crimson Cats, their show over the weekend brought that up. And I think it's a valid question. At some point, I think that has to sort itself out, and we can kind of pass it off early on to say, hey, it's early in the season, and that's fine. But at some point, we're closer to the Big Ten season than we are to the start of the year, and that has to sort itself out a little bit, and roles have to be figured out. And I think there are some guys who have carved that out pretty well, where you look at, Devin Davis off the bench. You know he's going to get a lot of minutes every night. If they keep Hollowell coming in, he's going to get minutes. Evan Gordon, the same thing. I think once you get past that, it's been pretty sporadic for a guy like Perea and Etherington and Hartman and Fisher. And at some point, I think that has to sort itself out, which, stinks for those guys, because I think it is a deep team, and that's one of the strengths. But at some point, I think it almost – you get to a point of diminishing returns where you don't really have guys who are playing with each other enough to develop that rhythm and cohesiveness, which maybe is where the whole second unit thing comes into play. You play those guys together in practice. They know each other really well. But even at some point, you got foul trouble. You can't rely on that. But it might be something that we see, which I thought worked fairly well, tonight in the first half. I don't think the substitution pattern over the rest of the game kind of followed through on that piece of it, but I thought it was at least maybe an idea that builds a little more cohesion than kind of the revolving door that we've seen at times.
Talking about roles, two guys who have carved out their roles are Yogi Ferrell and Noah Vonleh. We haven't talked about them yet. Noah, I was pleased with what I saw tonight. Obviously that UConn game was really the first major blip in his young career. Just never got into the rhythm of that game at all. And bounced back tonight. He got back on the double-double horse with 13 points and 12 boards. He was really efficient, 5-for-6, even knocked down a three. Was doing his Shaq impression, leading the break there, which is always exciting. So I thought a really solid game tonight for Noah. And he should do that against a team like Evansville, but still it was good to see a young guy bounce back like that. But Yogi, I thought, was a little bit more uneven, and I know you're probably going to have some hot sports opinions about him, so maybe focus on him more than Noah. You look at Yogi's line, 10 points, 2 boards, only 2 assists. He was 4-12 from the field, and he continued, Yogi's a really, really good player, and he's our leader, and he does a lot of good things, but I think his... just the how many early shots he takes in the shot clock is starting to frustrate me a little bit, especially 3-pointers, of a pull-up variety, and I realize you can get offensive rebounds off of those, but, some of those and just some of the, where it's just been 1 or 2 passes and he decides to pull up, I wonder if we're going to see that dissipate some as the season goes on. I hope so, because those just seem a lot of times like empty possessions. And it seems like a guy like him should be making every effort to get to the bucket first with how quick he is, as opposed to just settling for those jump shots, And I don't know if, he's trying to balance now, becoming a big scoring option, his improved shooting stroke, and he's still a young player himself, so I'm cutting him some slack. But, I just get maybe a tad bit more concerned each game as you see him, kind of throw up some of those shots that kind of make you facepalm a little bit. And I know you had a couple tweets about those shots, so I'll let you take it from here. But, what do you think about those two guys, who will probably be Indiana's top 2 scorers this year, unless Will kind of sneaks his way in there?
Yeah, I mean, quickly on Vonleh, I think, to me, it was a good bounce back game for him. You wanted to see him come back and be able to, get back into a rhythm of some kind after that UConn game, because he never clearly was in a rhythm during that. So I thought, a couple foul calls. I think one thing he's going to learn is, people are starting to, the book on him is being written as he plays these games, and he dips his shoulder a little bit and runs into guys. And while there's a certain element of flopping to it, people are going to do that, and I think that's something he'll need to adjust to. But I thought overall, good bounce back game from him, and really something I was looking at with the team in general of, you got kind of one game in between a loss and a tough road trip to Syracuse, so how would they respond? So I thought he and the team in general did well there. As for Yogi, the thing that stands out to me when I look at his stat line tonight is one free throw attempt. I listened to a little bit of Tom Izzo's rant, whatever you want to call it, over the weekend related to, the new rules and what he thinks about that, and told Keith Appling that if he took a jump shot, he'd kill him. While that might be a little extreme, there was an element of when I read that on Sunday morning where I thought, I would like to hear Cream saying the same thing to Yogi. I mean, he's a guy who can get to the basket. I mean, it's a little bit hard for him to finish as a smaller guy, but, the new emphasis on these rules is favors a guy like him where you kind of put your head down and drive and try to get your way to the line. And I think that's something that he has to be able to do. I think if there's a game that he's getting to the free throw line less than 6, 7, 8 times, then I feel like something's wrong. I mean, again, this emphasis on these rules, at least for now, and the way the games have been called so far, favor a guy with his quickness and ability to beat people off the dribble. And I don't necessarily have a problem with him shooting three-pointers. I think everybody who's watched him would agree his shooting is night and day different over what it was a year ago. The issue, though, is he a shot that he takes when he dribbles across half court, a guy sets a ball screen at the top of the key, and he takes a three. Quite honestly, they can do that at any point during the possession. And if that comes after, he's tried to drive and kicks it out to somebody and they move the ball around and he takes that shot, then so be it. But to me, that's just settling in a way that he doesn't really need to do. He's proven to people he can make some of those shots and hit a couple tonight. But, just some of the early possession things, I feel like I'm a, get-off-my-lawn guy at this point with, early jump shots, and I'm getting pissed off about it. But there's a certain element of, what I've talked about all year is, how does he balance facilitating with scoring? And I think that part is still a work in progress, and it's going to be. But at some point, that has to even itself out, and he has to figure that out. Or they find a way to get somebody else to be the facilitator a little bit more often, which I think they've tried to do with Hollowell, and obviously there's been mixed results there. But if you can't find somebody else, I think he has to understand that's part of his role. And at one point, he had taken 10 shots and had 10 points and had no assists. And I think that was relatively late in the game, so if you got those couple assists, those did come a little bit later. I'm not saying at this point he needs to dish out, 6, 7 assists like people expected of him last year, but there's a certain element of that role that he's got to try to figure out, and I think the early jump shots don't do anything to help that. Even if he makes them, I think those are shots he has the ability to get at almost any point during the possession, so why not try to, probe the defense a little bit more, try to draw some fouls and do things like that, because that's only going to help everybody else on that line.
Yeah. Well, I do want to start looking ahead a little bit to, we have a big rematch coming up, and I want to hit on a point that I heard Galen and the Crimson Cast guys talking about regarding our schedule and the difficulty that we may have come March because of it. But real quick, we do have another viewer question come in, and it deals with the topic that we were just talking about, which is shooting. It looks like right now no one has really stepped up yet as that come off the bench, be a big-time shooting guy, like we've had in the past. But there are guys, on the bench, Austin Etherington, Colin Hartman, guys like that who we know can step out and make threes. So the question is, why not get creative and try to get a guy like Etherington some looks from deep in a game like this? What do you think about that, and what do you think just, so every time I see Colin Hartman come out there, I feel like Matt Roth decided to use his last year of eligibility again, because he's obviously number 30. And sometimes I wish it was him, because we could use a guy who could shoot from deep like that. So what do you think about the question, and then just kind of a broader point about, Indiana's, we know they have an inability to shoot from three this year, but is there anything they can do with the current roster
you know, to improve that a little bit and to get, you know, get the ball in the hands of some guys who can make some of those threes off the bench.
You know, it's an interesting point. I think, you know, just in general, the thought of do you use a game like this and like some of the others, you know, the Syracuse and Notre Dame games notwithstanding, to try to let some guys work those things out, I don't think it's a terrible idea. On the flip side of that, I would say I'm sure they've seen these guys shoot in practice, and if they thought they were going to come out and make a bunch of threes, they probably would be playing a little bit more than they are. You know, that's the other part where I look and say, you know, there's probably something there that maybe they're just not seeing. And I don't know that either of those guys, I think the question for them becomes what can they give you defensively? Are they doing enough other things that if they aren't hitting shots that they can, you know, make something happen? That was the thing with Roth. I mean, I remember joking a couple years ago about sort of during a Penn State game, they talked about his defense, which was a laughable comment to say the least in the game that he had like six or seven threes. You know, he wasn't out there for defense, but you can count on him to make threes. If those other guys are at a similar level as him defensively and you can't count on them to make threes, what else are they doing that really puts it over the top and earns them minutes over somebody else? So far, I don't know that we've seen that. And again, I would go back to, you know, same comment I made about Jeff Howard. I haven't seen him in practice, so, you know, your guess is as good as mine about what he's actually doing, what they're actually doing. But I would guess if they're seeing things there, feels like they'd be playing a little bit more as it is. That being said, I don't think it would be terrible for either guy's confidence to give them a few extra minutes in some of these other non-conference games to see if they can, you know, try to work their way into that role, because so far I haven't seen that guy on the team yet. You know, Holes was a bit of an exception where he could play extended minutes, but, you know, even a guy like Roth or other players over the years we've seen be able to come in and just knock down threes, you kind of count on, you know, a Kyle Hornsby, somebody like that. You knew he was going to be able to come in, give you a few minutes, maybe hit some threes. If he hits a few, leave him in for a while. If he doesn't, take him out. I don't even think you have the guy that you're like, all right, well, let's just let him get a couple shots up and see. And I think that's going to be something that, you know, is throughout the season. That could change, but nothing I've seen so far makes me feel any better about the long-range shooting prospects of the team than I thought was still coming into the year.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're still looking forward, folks. If you have any questions about, you know, kind of the schedule of the team moving forward, big picture questions, feel free to ask them. I think we can safely put this game to rest again. Indiana beat Evansville 77-46. Did exactly what they needed to do coming home from New York and took care of an opponent that they should beat by that amount. You know, and mostly some good things tonight. So let's look forward. Obviously, coming up next week, Indiana plays Syracuse. It is a rematch of a game that still makes us all wretch from last year's NCAA tournament. And, you know, listening to Galen and the Crimson Cast guys, they were talking about Indiana's schedule, and they talked about the Syracuse game, they both basically put this game in the unwinnable category. You know, that really, you know, considering that the game is at Syracuse, you know, considering what we saw last year, you know, with a couple of early round draft picks and not really being able to even get into that game. Syracuse is a good team. Andy, as you look at that game, do you look at that as basically an unwinnable game where, you know, Indiana's going to have to, you know, kind of play perfect and have Syracuse really not show up? Or is this a little bit of a closer matchup than maybe some people think that it can be?
Well, as Stephen Bardo astutely pointed out, no other team in the country lost to second and fourth picks in the NBA draft this year. Only IU did that, which is startling. I did not realize that until you mentioned it. I think, based on – I've watched Syracuse a couple times this year, and based on what I've seen, they've generally let teams hang around. So that's the one thing if you want to, you know, look at something that says – hey, maybe there's something to be said for that. I watched them play against St. Francis of New York a couple Mondays ago, and that game was pretty close throughout. That was a game at the Carrier Dome. Minnesota played them pretty close last night and turned around and got blown out today by Arkansas. Cal tonight was close for a good part of the game in Maui, and, you know, ended up losing by 11 but scored 81 points. And, you know, there's always a potential, you know, kind of Maui hangover coming home. So I certainly did not chalk it up as a win when I tried to go through my own projections of what IU would win this season, but I don't know that it's completely in the unwinnable category. I think the thing that, you know, obviously the outside shooting is a pretty big concern. you know, if you look at Syracuse's Pomeroy numbers, the one area defensively where they really have done pretty poorly is on three-point defense. They've given up about 38%, which, you know, you can argue defense doesn't play a huge role in that other than how many open shots you give somebody. You know, but Cal didn't shoot very well tonight. Something they typically struggle with is allowing offensive rebounds, which is an area where I think IU could give them a little bit of trouble. But coming into the year, they've done pretty well at that. Looks like Cal grabbed 10 tonight. The one thing that when you look at, I'm basing this off one box score, so, you know, small sample size, but I'm going to go with it, is if you look at Cal, they had tonight, they made 28, or this evening, whatever it was, they made 28 shots and they had 20 assists. I don't think IU has come close this year to assisting on even half of their made baskets. So I think that's a little bit of a concern. I think it speaks to having somebody who can really, you know, get in and drive and kick. And while I think Yogi can be that guy, I think we got questions about who he's actually kicking it to at this point when we talk about some of the, you know, three-point shooting that we talked about before. So definitely a concerning game. But it's not like Syracuse, to me, has been head and shoulders better than everybody else. They're a little bit smaller up at the top of the zone. They're playing, you know, Tyler Ennis, who's a freshman point guard. He's 6'2", and Trevor Cooney are their, I think, largely their starting guards, and he's 6'4". So not quite the same length they had out at the top of the zone last year with, you know, Carter Williams and Brandon Trish there. So I think that helps a little bit, maybe be able to see some things, and that's an area where, you know, IU from a size standpoint has a number of guys in that range who are similar to Syracuse's team last year. The question is just going to be, you know, how they're able to execute against the zone, which obviously was a huge issue last year. Haven't looked great against it at times this year. Tonight was a little bit better, but, you know, Evansville is not, it doesn't have nearly the length and isn't a team that plays a ton of zone, so. I think there are definitely some questions there. It's not a game I'm going in thinking that IU can win, but I think there are at least a couple things that make you feel like they can keep it close and see what happens. But I think the three-point shooting is going to be a huge factor, and hopefully hopefully this is a game where Etherington or Hartman come in and decide they're going to get hot, or somebody else does, because I think IU is going to need that to try to extend a little bit. And I think, quite honestly, it's a good measure for the coaching staff of, you know, what can they do differently this year to prepare for that a little bit longer, not the quick turnaround last year that was a Thursday night game, so much for the quick turnaround. About the same turnaround, but I think something else, you know, what did they learn from that game last year? Different personnel, obviously, but what can they do to attack it a little bit differently? Because as we all can remember in horrific detail, the plan last year did not work at all.
Okay, so here's kind of a difficult question for you. So let's say that we do win, right? Let's say that we go out there, you know, the team is just more well-prepared for the zone. We end up pulling out the victory. Are you more excited or are you more frustrated thinking about what could have been last year?
I don't know. I think I'd definitely be more excited. At this point, there's nothing to be done about last year. Now, if you'd ask, you know, 25-year-old me instead of 35-year-old me, 25-year-old me would be pissed as hell if it came out and looked really good. But in my current state of maturity, I feel like I'd probably be more excited about this team, because I think it would, you know, ultimately it would speak well to what this team is capable of, which is, you know, some of the things that we've tried to follow over the course of the first, you know, handful of games this year. So in that regard, I think I would be more positive about it. And quite honestly, try not to think about what could have been last year.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap up here with, you know, just a little bit more talk about the schedule, because I think it, you know, especially with this game coming up, it's a topic that I think is going to be on a lot of people's minds. Because, you know, let's say that Indiana loses this game, which is, you know, I mean, look, we all are positive, we're going to be chewing our hearts out, but, you know, I think that is probably the safe bet, is that Indiana's going to struggle to go in there and get the victory. You look at the rest of the non-conference schedule, and you've got, you know, North Florida, and you've got Oakland, you got Nicholls State, you got Kennesaw State, and then you have Notre Dame there, which is really the only other team with a name on it. You know, but this is not necessarily any kind of imposing Notre Dame team. As we project forward, you know, looking at March, you know, in the Hoosiers NCAA tournament chances, beating Notre Dame, do you think that at the end of the year that's going to be, you know, in the marquee win category, or is it just kind of going to be another victory
if the Hoosiers are able to get it?
I don't think it's marquee win in the sense of some of the, you know, marquee wins that the team had last year, but I think to beat what will be, you know, probably a top 30, top 40 RPI team on a neutral floor would speak well to the, the committee and those kinds of things, because quite honestly, if they don't game, there's really nothing non-conference to really hang your hat on other than, yeah, you didn't take any bad losses. And at this point, I think outside of the, you know, Syracuse and Notre Dame games, there's no reason, you know, if you look at Tom Roy ratings, the Evansville was the best team left on the schedule outside of those two. Those other teams are all pretty bad. So you're likely not going to lose those, and winning those games doesn't do you a whole lot of good other than you didn't shoot yourself in the foot. And I do think, you know, what you know, Galen has talked about in there, it's a valid concern, because if you don't finish far enough above 500 in the league at this point, they're going to start to be questions of, you know, who did you really beat? And you know, there's a lot of teams that have done a pretty good job over the years of trying to kind of game the RPI or, you know, whatever you want to say, like Colorado State, I think, has done a pretty good job of that, where they schedule teams that are – there are teams they can – they feel like they can beat fairly easily but are not going to be bottom, you know, sub 300, sub 250 RPI teams, which is what really kind of kills an ICOM schedule. So if you beat teams that are in the 90s or even in the low 100s, it doesn't end up looking that bad, and it looks like you kind of challenge yourself, even though you may really not have. Now, obviously, there's a lot of planning that goes into that, trying to figure out who you have from year to year and who other teams are going to have year to year is, you know, as much, you know, art as it is science. But there's certainly been some teams that have been able to do that over the years, and I think that's something that IU, for whatever reason, didn't really do a great job of this year. You know, you don't really know how Washington is going to be, but they really haven't been all that impressive, in large part because they don't play any defense. As we, you know, Stony Brook, I think, will actually end up being a decent win because they're you know, one of the teams that probably challenged for the America East and should be pretty good. But other than that, you're really counting on somebody like Evansville to be a team toward the top of the Missouri Valley, which is possible, but it's also possible that they're not. So I think it's a valid concern, and I do think, you know, winning against Notre Dame, while not, you know, elite, it's not beating Kentucky, you know, a couple years ago. It's not some of those kinds of wins that they've had, but it also is one that proves you can beat a tournament-caliber team on a neutral floor, which is something that they really look for. Because the other thing is really this Syracuse game coming up. It's the only true road game out of the whole non-conference schedule. So that's the other thing. If you don't challenge yourself and you don't really beat anybody good, that's almost looked upon just as bad, if not worse, as you challenged yourself but you didn't get any wins.
So you're saying that the committee will not give Indiana extra credit for having good intentions of keeping the Kentucky series going?
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm not sure what the RPI calculation for that is, but I'm pretty sure it doesn't add much to it.
All right. Well, we're getting a little bit late here. Hopefully everybody has enjoyed this the Google Live on-air hangout experiment. I know I have. Hopefully we'll get the audio figured out for next time, so I won't have to awkwardly hold the phone up to my ear. But it is a red phone, so at least it kind of fits the motif of the room, right? But anyway, I think that's probably good. Let's wrap it up with some final thoughts here as we go down again. Indiana wins 77-46. They are now 5-1 on the season. Yeah, let's go to some final thoughts. Andy, you go first, and then I'll wrap it up.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, similar to one of the things I talked about earlier, to me, you know, glad to see the team bounce back and be able to, you know, be somebody they're supposed to beat, but also not get sucked into the, you know, disappointment of losing to UConn in a close game. Because with a young team, I think you're going to have those, you know, emotional roller coasters or, you know, whatever you want to say, where you know, the mindset of the team is going to be pretty critical, maybe more so than last year when you had a bunch of veteran guys who could kind of pick each other up and had been through different things and losses and how to do that. And I think that's something that, you know, you have to give a little bit of credit to, you know, some of the veterans on the team like Sheehy and Yogi, hopefully, that, you know, were able to kind of help guys through the, you know, the first loss and get back and refocus for this game. And at least for, you know, tonight, thought they did a good job of doing that. Yeah, again, the defense, I think, was important. That will be something that's important against Syracuse because I think points will be at a premium for IU against the zone, as we talked about a little bit, and that defensive effort's going to be pretty critical. So it's all kind of a learning process, and the roller coaster continues. We're on another upward trajectory here. You know, kind of came out early and took a team out of it that they should have beaten, which I think is progress in some sense, where you saw they didn't do that against LIU and let that game really kind of go throughout, and, you know, tonight, you know, stomp on Evansville pretty early and really kept him out of it, didn't let him get within double digits, I don't believe, at any point. So, you know, I think that's a good sign. But, again, not a ton to take away from it other than a good confidence booster going into the toughest game in the non-conference.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, my final thought deals with Jeremy Hollow, who, you know, probably the story coming out of this game, you know, leading Indiana with 18 points and having his really first breakout game of the season. Galen made an interesting point on Crimson Cast, talking about how, you know, Jeremy's being asked to do some different things this year, you know, handle the ball and be a distributor, and they're putting him into a role that is a little bit different for him. And so I think it's important that we maintain a little bit of perspective, you know, understand this is still a young player. You know, he's being asked to do some different things, and so he's, you know, he is struggling a little bit, and if he's looked a little bit out of sorts, you know, that may be part of it. And so, you know, I saw him during some of the games, and even early in tonight's game, you know, where he's, you know, kind of being described as now the most hated player, and here's, you know, Verdell Jones number two, and all these different things, and, you know, and I personally, look, Verdell Jones could be a frustrating player sometimes, but, you know, I never really liked a lot of the vitriol that was kind of, you know, put forth toward Verdell by some of the fan base, and I realize in the heat of the moment we get frustrated, but, again, that's all, you know, let's take a step back and remember these are young guys trying to grow into their roles, you know, trying to find their way. You know, they're not finished products. It's a tough game, you know. It's a tough level that they're playing at. And so, you know, as much as we can, let's try and be supportive and you know, kind of help these guys through, send them positive vibes. And I think tonight, you know, Jeremy Hollow finally tasted some of that success and showed off some of that talent that we know he has. And, yeah, it was against Evansville, but hopefully it can be a confidence boost that can lead him into a game like Syracuse, because he's the type of talent, you know, with the size and athleticism and everything that we need to play well against a team like Syracuse. And so I think this was a really big game for him to have, you know, going into that Syracuse game. And, hey, you know, it's obviously not a perfect parallel, but it reminds me a little bit of Kentucky a couple years ago, only that, you know, we really didn't know what we had with that team before that Kentucky game. You know, we had seen them, you know, get some decent wins and seen them play well, but that was really the game that showed us what we had with that team. Now, granted, that was a young team that had the benefit of Assembly Hall. This is a young team that's going on the road, and so it's going to be much more difficult for them to come away with the W. But I'm really excited to see how they respond, at least. You know, to see them compete, hopefully they go up there and play 40 minutes, and whatever happens, happens. I think a lot of us are assuming that it's going to be a loss, and the odds may be there. You know, but let's see. We don't know. You know, this team may surprise us. This team certainly has the talent. They just may not have the maturity yet, the togetherness, you know, to do it against a team like Syracuse that plays that zone. But it sure will be a fun game. Hopefully it's a competitive game. And like you said, Andy, you know, Syracuse is a team that has let teams hang around. You know, and if they're going to let Indiana hang around, you know, I haven't looked at Syracuse's schedule, but I would imagine they haven't let a team hang around quite yet that has, you know, a trio of guys like Yogi, Noah Vonleh, and Will Sheehy that combine that kind of talent and experience. And so if that's the case and they let us hang around, hey, you know, I'll take my chances with those guys, hopefully making some plays at the end. But I just like to see, like you said, it's a good measuring stick for the coaches. You know, did they learn anything from the NCAA tournament loss last year? Is this team going to look more prepared against the zone? You know, really more than a W would be great, obviously. But even more than that, you just want to see, you know, growth from a program standpoint. And this is a good measuring stick because the memory of last year's game is still fresh. And so hopefully we get a much more pleasant memory this upcoming week than we did last year. And a quick programming note about that game, we will not be doing a post-game show immediately after. We have a few scheduling conflicts, and so we are actually going to do a show the night after. So the game is on a Tuesday, the 3rd, I believe, right, Andy?
Yep.
The Tuesday the game?
Yep.
Okay. And so we're going to actually do a show on Wednesday night. And so we haven't figured this out yet, because we just talked about doing the Google On Air Hangout tonight. So we might do one of those. Certainly we'll be on Blog Talk Radio doing it. But we will have a show for you breaking down that game and all the action and looking forward to the rest of IU season. All right, everybody. Thank you to everybody who watched us on the Google Live On Air Hangout. We hope to bring you more of these. Thank you to everybody who listens on Blog Talk Radio and to everybody who picks us up on iTunes. Thank you, too. You are what motivates us and makes this show special, and we enjoy bringing it to you. We appreciate you coming and hanging out with us after every IU game. All right, Hoosier fans, let's cheer hard Tuesday night. Hopefully Indiana gets a victory over Syracuse, and have a good night, everyone.